Central Virginia. Are you ready to rumble? Fasten your safety belt and hold on tight. The community watchdog is in the house. This is The Schilling Show with your host, former city councilor Rob Schilling, on News Radio 1070 and 98.9 FM, WINA.
Rob Schilling's a freedom fighter.
And we are broadcasting live from the Democratic Socialist Republic of Charbonneville on the Green, formerly known as Charlottesville, but now spreading the toxicity of the Democratic Socialism into Albemarle County, which is completely infested at the board level and at the county office building level, and also to Green County, now run also exclusively by Democrats. Pretty sad, isn't it? Particularly in Green County, which was supposed to be defensible ground. When we were looking to move out of the city, I had one of my friends in Green County say, hey, move up to Green, it's defensible ground. Well, in some ways, yes, but look what's happened there on the Board of Supervisors. It's so sad. You've got the guy Barkley up there. You've got the rest of them, Friedel, and that crowd that couldn't spend straight, covering up all the corruption of Barkley and little sweetheart loan going on. And then what happens? You have an election, and good people who are running for office couldn't get elected, and others who are going to join the corrupt cabal and bring greater socialism to Green County, they all get elected. I can't figure it out, but that's what happened. I guess there's always next election. 977-1070 is the phone number here on The Schilling Show. Christian stands by. Open phones during this segment. Before we go to our first guest, Jim Whitten, who will be with us. The new book is The Old School Advantage, Timeless Tools for Every Generation. And coming up after the break here, once we get into our conversation, we will have a free copy of this book. It's really a pretty cool book, and I know Jim spent a tremendous amount of time researching some of the old school techniques that can make you successful in life. The book is valued at $21.95 US. It will be a free gift to one of our lucky listeners. That'll be caller number 5 after we make the announcement in the 1:15 segment of the program today. You know, there's so much that has been lost when you talk about old school and how people used to behave and treat one another, how they would get ahead. And today everything's technology and people are so busy staring down and looking at their phones and other technology that they've forgotten a lot of the things that were beneficial in communicating with people previous generations. Also coming up at the bottom of the hour, Blair Hawkins joins us, local historian, Charlottesville native. Yes, there are still a few living in Charlottesville, on the real history and the Blue Ribbon Commission, what they left out of the story, and there's an awful lot there. So I'm looking forward to that conversation as well. You know, we broke the story here on this program of the shakedown in Albemarle County, Betty Burrell and Tom Foley's secret shakedown of people just trying to get by in the hypertax era of Albemarle County, run all by Democrats, Taxantha and the pickpockets over there in the county office building. And then, of course, you have staff that likes nothing better than to support that because they like bigger government. They like the pay raises. Hey, the more people working for the county and government, the better, right? And so we broke the story. Others finally picked up on it. And Lisa Province from Seville has a follow-up here about Albemarle County's retroactive demands for business licenses. This is such a shakedown and such a scam. So somebody living in Albemarle County doing business, oh, you want to go out and you want to be a referee at a sports event or an umpire at a sports event, or perhaps you're a freelance writer. Yes, you too will be taxed by the overlords in Albemarle County. And I'm glad Foley's leaving. And I'll tell you why. Tom Foley, the county executive, was behind all this shakedown, and Betty Burrell right there with him. I wish they would send her packing. Oh, I'm just doing what I'm told. You're hurting people, and you have no advocates on the Board of Supervisors that will take the side of the people. You ought to wipe all of this out. Stop penalizing people for trying to be successful in Albemarle County. Really, you start paying taxes because you're doing these penny-ante jobs, just trying to keep your head above water because things like Obamacare and all the part-time jobs that came in, replacing the full-time jobs that went out under the Obama administration. And these corrupt Democrats, their idea is, hey, we'll tax you more. You want to be successful? We'll tax you more. Never mind that we all voted for Obama twice, and we all favored Obamacare. We don't realize that you're getting hammered, only that we don't have enough money to do the things we want to do in Albemarle County, which, by the way, are not part of what government should be doing, not part of the core functions of government, not constitutional things, but frivolous things, money-wasting things. And so Seville looked into this and found out, I want you to sit down, please, because you're part of this. The money that's being stolen and shaken out of the pockets of hardworking citizens just trying to keep their heads above water totaled $11.3 million this year. Well, that's a cash cow. So it's not just that the county's getting $11.3 million to squander, because they do nothing but urinate their money away in Albemarle County, pretty much just like the city of Charlottesville. There's so much waste going on, so much cronyism, collusion behind the scenes. Let's do this, let's do that. $11.3 million, but that money is coming out of your pocket and mine. These are dollars that would otherwise be spent probably in Albemarle County. In the last segment, we talked about restaurants having a hard time. We talked about retail stores having a hard time. So what do you think would be the effect of, instead of giving it to the greedy and corrupt politicians and Tom Foley, the overlords over in the Albemarle County office building, and I'm not talking about everybody, but you know who you are, Betty Burrell and the rest of them, people without a conscience, people that believe taking money from people who earned it is something that's for the good of society. Instead of standing up and saying, you know, this really is outrageous. I don't care that I get paid to do the job of collecting the revenue, but come on, I'm hurting people here. Let's give some relief. This money is coming out of the local economy and going into the big black hole of government, where it does absolutely no good for anybody except for government employees. And those people like Taxantha McKeel and the rest of them over there, Loopy Liz Palmer, Norman, Rick Rudolph and the rest of them. Yes, I said Rick Rudolph. And the rest of them, Sheffield, Ello, Ann, the ones that never stick up for the people that earned it. It's going there and giving them more political power. In the meantime, diminishing your own authority over your own life and ceding it to the government. There's a story of a freelance writer by the name of Lynn Priebus, who took in about $7,400 in 2012, and the county auditor looked at her papers, her tax records, and said, you owe $4,000. Can you imagine? Well, they look at all of this and say, what is your gross? And then they're going to tax you on that. Another corrupt aspect of this, and another reason why Albemarle County should discontinue this, but they won't. Priebus was upset because of the time-consuming and frustrating nature of fighting City Hall. In fact, she claims when she came here from California, about 10 years after I did, she came here in 2007, even asked the county, and they said, you don't need a business license. And then when they contacted the county again, they said, well, we didn't answer that. I wasn't the person you spoke with, and so too bad, you owe the money, right? No accountability, no accountability. Then went after another person who happened to live in the city of Charlottesville. Oops, that was a mistake. Betty Burrell says the finance department has two full-time business tax auditors who have been working to identify and quote-unquote educate business owners who are not compliant with the county business tax laws. And you'll remember that we put in a FOIA request to Tom Foley saying, hey, what are the schemes? We didn't put it quite like that, but what are the tax collection schemes that you guys are doing over there in Albemarle County? We'd really like to know. And you know what came back from Tom Foley, the overlord? You know what came back from him? A big fat nothing. We don't have to tell you we're using a FOIA exemption on working papers and you can go jump in a lake. He didn't say it like that, but that's exactly what was between the lines. The story tells us that almost anyone who files a Schedule C on their income tax is susceptible, and I love that term, especially since the county has access to state income tax records. Hey, it's not only that the county has access to state income tax records, Lisa Province, and we have documented this online at shillingshow.com. The county is downloading your Schedule C, D, E, and F forms from the state of Virginia and keeping them on their county servers indefinitely. You didn't know that, did you? Or maybe you forgot that little detail. They are keeping all of your private tax documents, and they are now storing them on a server somewhere, and putting these two tax auditors on the task of going over them to shake you down for as much money as they possibly can shake you down for. Here's the bigger part of the problem. The story concludes with a comment from the subject of the story, Lynn Priebus. It was frustrating and annoying, but if it's on the books, we have to pay. The government says we have to pay, and therefore we have to pay, right? The county needs the money, and I don't want them to raise my property taxes. The county needs the money, and I don't want them to raise my property taxes. What do you want to bet that Lynn Priebus is a good Democrat and a product of government schools? Instead of saying that the county needs the money and I don't want them to raise my taxes, you should say the county really doesn't need the money because they're swimming in cash. They are unable and ill-equipped, incompetent at managing their own budget and understanding the true function of government, and therefore they're going to get the money and maybe they won't raise my property taxes. I've got news for you, Lynn Priebus. The property tax increases are coming anyway. You better get ready and hold on to your wallet and be prepared to slap Taxantha's hand when it slips into your back pocket. It's 1:17 here on The Shilling Show. Old School Advantage author Jim Wynn will be joining us in just a moment. We'll have a free copy of the book for you, and that's coming up on The Shilling Show in just a second. Stay with us. Hey, The Shilling Show continues here on a Thursday edition. The new book is The Old School Advantage, Timeless Tools for Every Generation. We welcome to The Shilling Show author Jim Wynn. Lots of great information in this book. And by the way, we'll have a free copy of the book to give away to a lucky listener coming up in just a couple moments. So stay with us. That'll be caller 5 when we make the announcement. Jim Wynn, welcome to The Shilling Show. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Rob. Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You know, I was reading through the introduction of the book, and you spent an inordinate amount of time, and I can tell after reading the book, in researching the topics for the book. Tell us a little bit about the process, because I thought it was remarkable.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, first of all, know that I wrote this book for my 4 millennial age children, now yes. Ages 17 to 24. And so I started a couple of years ago. And I'm a voracious reader. I'd read 400, 450 books over about a 5 or 6 year period. And of course, you do that, it changes you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, how could I get my kids to read all these books? And of course, the answer is you can't. So the research I did really, maybe I didn't know I was doing the research at the time, but it ended up going back to all of those hundreds of books and trying to pick out the best nuggets I could to put in one book that maybe my kids might read. Now, fortunately, they have read it, and it's helped them, but that's kind of the short backstory on the research.
So what is the old school? I mean, we hear the term a lot, but how did you define it in doing your research?
You know, it's really the principles, those, I hate to say old-fashioned because that tends to be a negative term, but yeah. It's really those things that have been around in wisdom circles for centuries or even millennia, those things that don't change. Interpersonal communication techniques, leadership principles and qualities, lifelong learning and the importance of those things. These are all tried and true, and Americans of every ilk tend to agree that those kinds of old school things as defined like that are important. And of course, the technology that, which I call the great distraction that we are all involved in right now, because of that, I think we require just being reminded of those things that wiser people have come up with throughout the centuries.
We're talking with author Jim Wynn. The book is The Old School Advantage, Timeless Tools for Every Generation. A lot of great information in here. And right now to caller number 5 at 977-1070, we have a free copy of the book, The Old School Advantage. Christian stands by. The number is 977-1070. And caller number 5 at 977-1070 gets a free copy of The Old School Advantage. We'll tell you where you can buy a copy a little bit later on here. So let's go to this whole issue of technology, because you talked about addressing a group of millennials and what they thought was the symbol of their generation, and what was it?
And I'm sorry, the what of their generation?
The symbol of their generation.
Oh, yeah. No question. It's the iPhone. I gave a keynote address to juniors and seniors in college, and I simply asked that question. And almost before I ended the question, they literally were holding up their smartphones as the answer to the question. So that's how attuned everyone is, that it is truly the, you know, a machine the size of a deck of cards literally has the knowledge of the entire world inside of it. That is remarkable. I always think of anachronistic scenes where George Washington has an iPhone. Can you imagine that?
Well, I can't. But what we see, Jim, is so many people distracted. You know, I don't carry a smartphone with me on my person. I have a phone in the car for emergencies. But I look around me in restaurants, in schools, in business settings, even when people are sitting socially out in a park somewhere, and instead of conversing with each other, they're looking down at this thing. And I think, you know, that's sad in many ways.
You know, it is. And I think there are a lot of organizations that are beginning to realize the damage that it is doing in some ways. We're so connected on one hand, yet that connection is creating a disconnect in terms of relationships on the other hand. I can't remember which restaurant it was. I want to say it was Chick-fil-A who had a little box hanging on the wall, and they said, put your phone here while you eat and talk with your family. So that's the kind of thing that is occurring, the unintended consequences of having such fantastic technology.
Let's talk.
But you're right. That's the scene you see everywhere you go, isn't it?
And I love that you brought that example up, and I love that businesses are encouraging people to talk to one another. You know, one of the things that you emphasize is the power of handwritten thank you notes, and they're good on so many levels, but tell us why that is.
I was visiting with the Fortune 500 HR director, which you don't get to that position unless you're pretty good at HR, and you've conducted a few interviews in your career. And I asked her how many handwritten notes in her career had she received from applicants after the interview. And I was stunned when she told me the number was 3.
Wow.
And I said, did any of those get the job? And she said all 3 of them got the job. Now, that they had to have other qualifications as well. It wasn't just the fact that they wrote a handwritten note. But I tell you, the gap is so wide now between those that will perform those old-school tasks of handwritten notes and those that rely on technology to express their gratitude or whatever correspondence it is, even condolences. The gap is so wide now that those that will choose to do it again are going to set themselves up as wise beyond their years. They're that simple act. I tell kids, if you'll write one handwritten note a day for the rest of your career, there's no stopping you.
It is a remarkably powerful tool, and it's also powerful because people love to receive things in the mailbox, and it's so rare anymore. But whenever I see something in my mailbox that has a handwritten address on it, it's amazing to me, and I'm excited to see what's inside.
Absolutely. And you know what? You save them, Rob, right?
That's right.
I've got drawers full at both my workplace and my home office of cards that I've received throughout the years, and you just don't throw them away.
We've got about a minute left, and I want to talk about steps for reviving the old school. It's kind of funny, but I mean, can it be done through technology? Can we turn people away from technology and all of the shortcuts by using technology?
I think it does play a role, ironically. You know, I talk about in the book that we don't want to abuse the technology. We want to use it wisely. But the problem is we've abused it. And so if we can incorporate some things, you know, for example, we have a free app for smartphones at The Old School Advantage is the name of the app that has the major principles in the book on an app in your pocket. So that's a way we're using technology. So I think the ironic answer is yes. But if you can get back to the old school principles, such as handwritten cards and those interpersonal communication techniques we talk about, you're going to be so far ahead of the game. Such an opportunity in a century that is dominated by technology.
The book is The Old School Advantage, Timeless Tools for Every Generation. If people want to get a free copy, if they want to purchase a copy of the book, Jim, let's tell them where.
Certainly on Amazon and all the major retailers online. And even in bookstores, they can also go to theoldschooladvantage.com and order a copy there. A lot of folks want bulk copies, schools and businesses. So if you'd like that, go to our website and send us an email. And that website is theoldschool.cool, COOL. It's not com. com. We're trying to make the old school cool. So that's where our website is.
It's a great book. You spent a lot of time on it, and I know it's going to help a lot of people. Jim Whitten, thanks for joining us today on The Shilling Show.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Rob.
All right, it's 1:29 here on The Shilling Show. Coming back on the other side with Blair Hawkins and the real Charlottesville history. Stay with us. Well, isn't that appropriate? The Sugartown Bump comes up, and we're talking about the history of Charlottesville. And I didn't plan that. It's in the rotation of 200 or so bumper clips, but that is certainly providence. We welcome back to The Shilling Show, and it's been a while since he's been here in studio with us, but I always am appreciative of Blair Hawkins, Charlottesville native, local historian, who does a lot of research and speaks out on things that other people just don't want to talk about. Today, we're getting into the real history, things that the Blue Ribbon Commission left out of their report. And Blair Hawkins, welcome back to The Shilling Show.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. And I've printed out the entire 300-page report, and I've got it right here. If someone goes online, you can download it from my website, which is blairhawkins.net/RH. For real history.
All right. I hope people will take advantage to take a look at all of this stuff. So what was your perspective on this whole process in the first place when they commissioned this Blue Ribbon Commission to look at removing the statues and somehow augmenting or changing the history of Charlottesville as it's being told presently?
Well, my first reaction is that it would leave out a lot of information, which it does, but it includes a lot of information also. And a lot of the information in the report is the commissioners explaining how they took a vote, and a lot of the information is about the participation of the public and how certain ideas keep coming up that I keep talking about all the time. And there's one section of the report about page 70 to 130, which is a timeline of articles from the Daily Progress from 1900 to about 1926, that really shows that before 1917 or 18, when the Lee Park started up, it was the golden age of race relations, as I've called it. And it was about 1918 when the first NAACP in Charlottesville opened up, was really things started going downhill. So when the mayor talks about, you know, all these bad things that happened in Charlottesville, yeah, but it wasn't until like the 1920s. And I think Antoinette Rhodes has been on this show.
Yes, she has.
And she helped me. You know, I don't know everything, and the history is constantly changing because it's the story about the past. Mm-hmm. So when you find new information, it changes a little bit. But it was a big change from like 1917 and 18. Things really went downhill.
You talk, Blair, and by the way, 977-1070 is a phone number if you have comments or questions for our guest, Blair Hawkins. We're talking about the real history of Charlottesville. You talk about the golden age of race relations. What were things like then, and why were things golden?
Well, it wasn't golden everywhere in the South, but it was in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And part of that is the slave auction block, and I really, that's new to me, just like the at-large is new to me, too, you know, several years ago. And what seems to have happened in the 1850s, you know, as the majority of Charlottesville was black and enslaved. So the white minority feared a slave revolt. So there's a lot of torture and spectacles, probably up at Court Square at this auction block. But from 1860 to 1865, things certainly changed because you had the colored First Baptist Church with 800 members. You know, so all of a sudden, Charlottesville was organized. So it wasn't just that people were, you know, could remember these atrocities in the 50s and say, wait a minute, we need to calm down and back off a little bit. But it was other things that black Charlottesville was 52% black. I mean, Charlottesville was 52% black, and it was organized. So it was a golden age of race relations.
People were getting along with each other. There wasn't the animosity, even the animosity that we see today, which I think is worse than what I've seen here in the 18 years I've been here.
And there are other things going on, like the rise of Vinegar Hill. And that was John West, who was the son of the Gibbons, who belonged to they were slaves of a university professor. And there's a new marker for them. So John West comes along, and he's developing Vinegar Hill, and a lot of blacks are buying real estate. And it's really, even after the 1920s, in this golden age where the a black society became so strong in Charlottesville, even after the 1920s, they were still strong, and you still had black society, black culture. It's really not until urban renewal comes along that they're able to go after the real estate, which is really keeping people in power. The black golden age kind of still going a little bit. What do you think?
Blair Hawkins, you talk and you use the terminology, the segregationist at-large city manager form of local government. I'm certainly not a fan, and we can get into my own history with that. But tell us, what was the genesis of that and why you term it as a segregationist system?
Well, before that, Charlottesville had a more complicated system in, with ward representation and at-large representation. And so you could have black representatives representing a minority, say maybe the black community. But remember, in the golden age of race relations, it was, you know, almost 50-50. It's not until annexations start annexing white suburbs that that the imbalance in race begins to take hold. And so pretty much what you get is the at-large comes along, and what that intends to do is 51% of the population elects all your representatives. Mm-hmm. So you may have a black section of town, 20% of the population, but guess what? They don't have a voice, because the 51% is the same 51% is always electing the representatives. So they may represent, they may elect a black representative, but certainly that representative represents the 51% of the entire city. And is, I think black people knew at the time, people did write letters, and there were rebuttals to all this KKK stuff. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, well, all the whites in the 1920s were KKK. That's just not the case. And the report, that one section with the timeline, really does, you know, show counter information that, you know, I don't think that really leads up to the conclusion that they want, and that it's a statue causing the problems and not people or an institution.
Blair Hawkins, you had what I thought was a profound statement about the at-large system, saying that at-large explains why black city councilors support policies hostile to minorities. And we've seen it time and time again through the years.
Yes.
People like Kendra Hamilton, presently even Wes Bellamy, and before that, people like Maurice Cox, who ran on a platform of wards and then forgot that he ran on the platform, or that's what he said.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's just hard to explain. I mean, it's hard to, when you like have a debate with someone, say you're the challenger to status quo and they're defending status quo, but for the third party audience that's watching you, they can't judge you on the information. They can only judge you on personality or charisma or group identity. You know, like if a female is arguing the status quo, then all females will say, well, I'm going to go with the status quo because she's a woman, I'm a woman, that's all it is to it. And other group identities, you get that also working. So you'll get a black city council representing the 51% of the city, but then you'll get minority people say, oh, they represent me too because it's, they look like me. But they're
really not.
Exactly.
And we saw, and we did the analysis of the independent blacks who happened to be Democrats, by and large, people like Sherman White and many others throughout the course of the 70s running in this at-large system as black independents, lost every time citywide, but won in their own wards or precincts and would have been elected had it not been for this corrupt, racially exclusive system that is promulgated by Charlottesville Democrats. It's 1:44 here on The Shilling Show. We're going to get to the phones on the other side at 977-1070. Our guest is Blair Hawkins. Agree or disagree, we'd love to hear from you. We're talking about the real history of Charlottesville. Stay with us. Final segment of The Shilling Show for today, talking about the real history of Charlottesville, the omitted history in the Blue Ribbon Commission's report, and things that other people just don't want to talk about in this town, but we will, and we do, and I'm glad Blair's here. There's a line open for you at 977-1070. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Richard, who's been hanging on. Thanks, Richard. You're on with Blair Hawkins.
Hey, Blair and Rob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Which we're living in, not a democracy, we live in a representative democracy where in the city case of the city, every ward would have their representative vote for their constituency, kind of like the Electoral College on a federal level, where the small states still get representation, and yes, the large states don't completely obliterate them, and they never get a vote.
Yes, sir.
Is that how it goes?
Not now. In the past, in Charlottesville, it was modeled after the federal system. So you had the Senate and you had the House of Representatives at the federal level. And at the city, you had the Board of Aldermen and the Common Council. And we're not really sure every little detail of how this worked, but it was basically modeled after the federal system, where you probably had Board of Aldermen who were more at large, representing a larger area, and the Common Council.
On the recent presidential election, the popular vote did not take Trump.
That's right.
Trump won because the small states had representation, and that they got a vote in the presidential election, and their vote wasn't diluted to where it didn't even count.
Right. The Electoral College is a mixed, sort of like a mixed at-large ward system, where, you know, you count the representatives of the House of Representatives by population, but then,
right,
exactly, but then the Senate is more for equalize the large states and the small states, and that's what we sort of used to have in city council.
Richard, thank you so much for the call. And what a lot of people don't realize, there was a point in time in the history of Charlottesville when they were really consolidating power. The Democrats were doing this statewide, and they brought what was once a 12-member body, or maybe even larger, down to 3 members. And they were trying to consolidate power that much. That went to court, and we've done all the documentation and research on this. But that was thrown out and eventually went back to this 5 at-large system. We're talking with Blair Hawkins about the Charlottesville real history. LJ writes in and says, Wes Bellamy got the most votes, but Mike Signer, obviously the white guy, was elected mayor. Why? Most money spent? Or maybe that Wes is just supposed to be the black counselor, not the power, despite the votes behind him. And of course, he foolishly played that role to his own detriment. And I had this conversation about at-large and wards with Wes Bellamy behind the scenes and basically said the same thing to him. Do you see that? That dichotomy of, hey, Wes got the most votes, but Signer coming in equally inexperienced, and somehow Signer's the mayor.
Well, that's because the same 51% elected both of those guys, but the city councilors elect the mayor. In the at-large city manager system, you've kind of got 5 mayors because all city councilors represent the entire city. But then those 5 councilors choose a symbolic mayor just to run the city, but the city manager is the actual mayor. So really nothing about city council of Charlottesville is straightforward. Everything's misleading.
And you said in your report here that the city council is the source of racism that the commissioners cannot address directly. I thought that was brilliant.
Well, if you see a problem we have now and you say, well, that's been going on for a long time. So you go back and you look, well, what's causing it? Maybe these statues are causing it. They are here about the same time the problem started. Maybe it's the Democratic Party that they're here. They were here then. They're here now. Or maybe it's the at-large system. Or maybe it's something else that we haven't explored yet. But definitely, I don't think a statue has the ability to discriminate or cause all these problems. It must be something else. And really, the only thing unreformed since the 20s is city council. Like, you could say, well, we've got schools from back then, but they were segregated then. They're integrated now. So almost everything is reformed except city council.
Yeah, and that's the question that I asked earlier, just an open-ended question, is how in this place that has been run by tolerant Democrats for all of these decades and decades and decades, and today has a black city manager, a black assistant city manager, a black head of the schools, a superintendent, a black police chief, and yet we have rampant racism in a place that votes 80% for Barack Obama and is run exclusively by Democrats. We can't solve our problems. Why?
It's the at-large system that fit that same, yes, 51% are selecting all the counselors. So they're not selecting Wes Bellamy to represent the minority, 20% minority of black people. They're electing him to give the appearance that he is representing that minority, while in fact, he's representing the 51% of the 20 or 30% that actually vote. So it's a tiny percent of the people who control the city.
You know, once we pass the elected school board with the 70% vote, the next up to be discussed, or pretty much discussed at the same time, but I had conversations with people about getting an elected mayor here. Of course, something that you've talked about in the past. Why is there this resistance to letting people have a say in their own governance?
I would have to say history. There was this movie, I think, The Giver, where where the actress said that when you let people make the decision, they always choose wrong. And that's, I think that's just the arrogance of the Democratic Party locally. You know, that large system kind of fosters that. And, you know, they just think they know it all because they're completely in charge and they control the message. They control the vote. They control everything. I mean, at large is bad.
It is bad, and it's why the federal government came into a lot of places and abolished the at-large system, and we somehow escaped the purview of the federal government, and that's perhaps a topic for another day. But let's finally go to how do we, I mean, this is what Wes Bellamy says he wants to do going forward. How do we heal Charlottesville?
Well, truthful history heals, mm-hmm. and that was the graphic in the report, which I'm surprised was in there.
Yeah.
And so I reproduced it a million times on the back of it.
I saw that, yeah.
Exactly. So I think we need to talk about the truth, you know, and we need to be more direct. For example, the Vinegar Hill Monument. Now, I've said that there's way more urban renewal than Vinegar Hill, and the report actually says that too. So it's kind of like you have a huge sign that says Vinegar Hill, and then in teeny tiny fine print, you'll say, oh, this is not the only lost neighborhood. So why don't you rename the monument as the Lost Neighborhoods Monument or the Urban Renewal Monument and then list out all the neighborhoods instead of picking one neighborhood and pitting neighborhood against mm-hmm. neighborhood, dividing people. I mean, it just, I don't understand it. You know, I probably never will.
And I hope on there they put in a line that this was all done under the purview of Democrats, so that we have that history as well. Somehow we never seem to say that with all the problems that
exactly.
we have in Charlottesville. There's no political affiliation there, but you can't pin it on anybody else but the Democrats, and they still own the problem. Blair Hawkins, if people want to be in touch with you, I know you've got a website. Tell people where they can read your own thoughts on these issues.
You can go to BlairHawkins.net. /RH for real history. I'm on Facebook. I have a blog on Blogger.
And that's linkable off the BlairHawkins.net.
BlairHawkins.net. It's got the buttons at the top, and then it's got a link to the real history and different things. And that's probably the simplest way.
All right. I always enjoy our conversations, and I appreciate your input on local history. After all, you were born here, and you know a lot about Charlottesville that many of us who came later do not know. Blair Hawkins, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. That's going to wrap up today's edition of The Shilling Show. We come back here tomorrow. It's Friday already, and Nick Oberheiden will be with us on the federal courts and the opportunity for Donald Trump to change things, the direction by federal court appointments. Bonner Cohen on regulation rollback. And Jim Carpenter, who is retiring, did you hear that? Life Behind the Lens. We'll be talking to Jim tomorrow for half an hour as we go out and finish up the year. We'll see you soon on The Shilling Show and online at shillingshow.com.